apologies. Yes, hi.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, I don't believe the church is coming out and telling us the truth.
What is the truth?
Well,
the church losing money too?
Huh?
That the church is losing money too? If you don't have people coming to church, you're not able to get the money to sustain the church.
Yeah, but I wasn't really getting to that yet, but I can get to that. I read earlier in the week that the Prime Minister was, when the Prime Minister spoke, they misunderstood her, that the additional 20 indicated that you're going to bring 20 people in the church as congregants to worship. That's the first thing. Then when they realized that 20 people then was not as congregants, and the attorney general said that the congregants are to stay home, they said they're going to write the Prime Minister and make a case for more people that they know how to keep the distance and so on and protocol. Then I'm hearing today now that if they open ram shops, they could open the church. The government didn't open ram shops. Shops were always open. Village shops were always open, selling corned beef and biscuits and sardine. Let me tell you things that I was eating a lot of those things, and chicken and so on. All that the shops are doing now, as being advised, is that you can now sell alcohol, whereas you could not have sold alcohol, but you have to take it away.
That's exactly what we said earlier.
When they're saying that if you can open ram shops, you can open the church. If you go into a ram shop, you can buy where you want and go along. If you go into church, you go into church for an hour or two or three, and you're not going to be able to have the social distance. People like to hug up and greet one another and another thing. Or you can go into church and you can take off that mask and sing now for goblets to be flying all about the place. 6 feet, they can go 13 feet a goblet. So you can't open the church yet, but they're not telling the truth. Coming back to what you mentioned, they are missing the tithes and the money and the offerings, and they need to come and tell us. That is the reason why they want the church open. Ain't got nothing to do with the poor people calling for the food, man. Poor people are getting food from other areas. They want the church to give them the food. It's the money that they're missing, man.
Well, that's your judgment, but the point is that even food can be distributed from the churches without having to reopen the churches per se. I mean, you can do pickups and that sort of thing. So I think that when you put the two on the same footing, it makes it seem as though you're saying that implying that the rum shops are open for people to congregate. That is not what the government
said.
That's
not what it is.
Never. It wasn't said.
So they need to come and tell the truth and stop fooling around and understanding that the church is not open. I call for the attorney general to keep the churches closed for a little more time. You don't have to open the church, no, boy. You don't need to go to church. You got your Bible home. Read the Gospels and the Epistles.
Oh, but that's you. There are other people who like the fellowship, though.
Yeah, but you can go and contaminate the place.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good
it's 3 minutes after 1 o'clock. Hello?
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon.
Now, David, I have a point to raise to you. Huh?
Okay.
So what the last caller said, but I want to say this first, the Christian Street. He asked me about the second anniversary. I asked you to set up a team to discuss the second anniversary. But you know, Straker's 10th Street, my sword come and tell me, or ask you to set up a team where we could discuss why the Democratic Labour Party up to 2 years now and they can't select one single candidate. I would hope that he include that as well when speaking about the government and their second anniversary. He also spoke to you about road networks. The only road network in Barbados is 100% better than when the Democrat Labour Party was in the office. And Straker's 10th Street know that as well as anybody else. I mean, roads that he traversed almost daily. And I can only mention Fairfield, Deacon's Road, and Green Hill. Then Highway 2. These are roads that he always say that he traveled all the time on there, right? And there's much more you can say about that. But let me get to my point. Now, I agree with your last caller. Because even when I hear these church members or pastors that call themselves, and I don't believe they're pastors, because I find recently we had a lot of these churches cropping up. And all of a sudden I hear the apostles and bishops. I don't know who are ordained these people to be apostles or bishops. But they are calling our government now to allow them to open back. And David, you know for a fact, when a church in operation, you don't get in a pulpit and preach with a mask on your face. You don't sing choruses with masks on your face in the church. So I don't understand what they're really asking the prime minister to do. I mean, they just want to see if they could get this thing spread as far as they possibly can. It's impossible. You cannot open up the churches at this present moment. Right now, we've got a situation in this country with the church. And the people, the health authorities, scratching their heads to find out how those poor people are contaminated with the same virus. And they now would come and ask the government to open back a church. It's foolishness.
I think we can't lose sight of what the main objective is here. That objective is to try to minimize the spread of this COVID-19. Now, we've done very well so far in containing it, but you can't relax. And even in church, I mean, they have to be exceedingly careful what are the protocols that they are going to follow once they are together in that place as a congregation. So I think we need to be very cautious with it, and that's as much as I would say at this stage.
But David, if you look into this nation, you see some of the more responsible pastors or reverends saying that they are not in favor of the churches being opened up. And I agree with those guys, because it's a chance to take in. And you know something, David, some of these apostles, clearly that David Thompson would not die. You remember that guy, David?
Well, perhaps he meant die in a different way.
well, he believed that we wouldn't die from the COVID-19.
Spiritual death is quite possible, you know that.
I thank you, David, man.
All right. I'm seeing here that this drug that has been touted by President Trump, the hydroxychloroquine, they're now focusing on a study that says that it is linked to a higher risk of death in COVID patients. I'm sure you'll be hearing a bit more about that during the course of the day. Down to brass tacks, hello.
Miss Ellis, a blessed day to you, sir.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, I am tremendously blessed, and I trust that you would be remain this way as well for the weekend, the station.
Sounds like I got a cold.
And your family.
Do you have a cold?
I went swimming this morning, and I took some salt water into my nasal passages and so on to help clear it out, you know?
Okay.
But there may still be a little bit congestion inside there, but it'll be okay. Other than that, I'm very good. I'm blessed, you know.
Yes.
Trust. I wish the best for our nation as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, you know. And you know, I'm concerned about whenever you have to. When I say you, I mean people has to say anything that they are concerned about as far as the way how things are going now. Let's say if the supporters of who would be obviously a party supporters, they jump on you, it's like a venom that's coming from them. This morning or earlier, when the lady, who we call the Trinidadian lady, was just highlighting salaries and so on, because as she said, when you didn't have it before you. And she sought to do that. They were so upset because she was doing that as though that was an injustice or something wrong that she was doing. I mean, this is unfortunate.
You've been associated with Brass Tacks for so long.
Yes.
Candy Runnings.
Oh, what? Hello?
Monday is for you, or it's for somebody else. Come on. You don't really need to...
Well, I was just mentioning that, by the way, but that's not what...
What's it got on your mind?
Yeah. The mantra of Ms. Motley, when during the election, it was Mayor Cares. That is what was being highlighted all over the place. Ms. Ellis, when I hear that, with what is happening now as far as asking for this, what is called a forced salary, what is it? There's a fancy word that's being used now, which is tantamount to salary cut, like the 8% cut and so on. But they're using some fancy name. Would you say that the mantra that was being touted across the country then, that what is happening now, by saying this to the civil servants, and not one single word about cabinets or the bloated government say about what is the intention of them as far as the cut is concerned? Because if you are going to be asking civil servants to do this, then I believe the rallying cry of being care, this was should have been the first indication that should have been highlighted, which would encourage or give those who you are asking to do it now a reason or a greater reason to do what you're asking them to do. Don't you think so?
You know, I've spoken about this before.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go on. I didn't really want me to continue.
No, I'm saying that I've spoken about this before.
Mm-hmm. Because, you see, and I'll tell you this, I have a concern in that. This cut is going to be is being asked for what? Is this 3 years or 2 years or something like that? Is that what is being asked?
Well, I'm not sure about the specifics. They have to sit down and work it out.
Okay, because you see, I'll tell you why.
The circumstances, I want you to know, though, in all of this.
Hello?
There's a terrible noise on your line. Can you call us back?
Oh, okay, wait a minute. No. I know what it is. Let me just stop it right away.
Okay.
That was a fan that I had going, you know? Because
a fan?
It's quite humid, you know?
That's a noisy fan.
No, it was just blowing air. It's a new fan, but it was just blowing air. I'm in a room away from any noise.
Mm-hmm. So you were saying?
Yeah, my view is this, that, you see, why people, I didn't have a salary cut because I'm a pensioner now. But my concern is this, that if you are asking for 3 years, what is the guarantee that after the 3 years, you will not come back to the extent to say, we are not yet where we want to be? And therefore, we're extending it for another 2-3 years. Where is or what is being said to give workers the hope that this will happen? Because remember, persons' investments were slashed right after the election. People who had their investment as far as bonds and so on is concerned, and they were even it was said to them, "You're going to either take this or there's no guarantee that you can get any money at all." What is the guarantee to the worker that this is not going to happen?
Look,
you see, people...
Hold on a minute. Let's be realistic. You know that no guarantees can be given. Because as we speak, we are fighting with COVID and something else can come and hit us and push us further down. Yes, people, we really got to be thankful for what we have achieved so far. And essentially what you need to be doing at this point is to encourage people to look for solutions, to work together to pull this country up and pull it out of this morass. When at the end of the day, we all have to live here. But, I mean, it is not good for us to be promoting all that is negative, and we're going down the road to say, well, there's no hope. That's how you feel? There's no hope? We can't pull out of this?
No, this is not negative,
Why is it then?
This is a confident building process.
Oh, yeah? That way?
Yes. If you're going to, Mr. Ellis, no, be honest. When you look at how salaries has been, and the taxes that has been slashed or slaughtered, people have been slaughtered with that, and then you give them a 5% increase, and then, well, that's disappear right away. And now you're going to ask them to do this and a further deduction in their salary.
What is causing that? Is this because the government just don't like poor people or don't like people? Is it that the circumstances that prevail? What is your alternative to this?
No, you see, I am dealing with what is the reality of what is happening. Miss Ellis, you cannot.
But that reality is based upon the environment in which we find ourselves, with a pandemic that has shut down our tourism industry, for instance.
Let me point out to you here that, if a person passed by a house and a dog bite them today, that is something that's going to be remaining their thoughts about passing that by the house again. And I'm saying that to say this. If you had your investment slashed and all that kind of thing, you are going to ask for some kind of guarantee. After all, you're human. And don't let's fool ourselves, Mr. Ellis. You cannot just ask people to do things knowing in the past what has happened. So that's indelibly imprinted on their thoughts. And they have families. Therefore, you've got to give them some guarantee, some certainty of what you are asking them to do that they can depend upon. It's only human.
But sir, what you're saying is desirable, isn't it all linked to what is the macro picture? Isn't it linked to what you can afford at a given point in time? I mean, I've been part of discussions going back to the 1990s where people felt that Barbados was a country that really was going to have to face some kind of setback. Would have to step back and then come forward. That many of the gains that we had, we were not actually earning our way in the world. We were borrowing our way out of problems. And even as we speak, there are those, I'm sure, you will hear people say that we've got the foreign reserves high, but the foreign reserves have been bolstered by borrowings. We have not yet earned our way. How can you give?
So, okay.
And you're not earning your way.
So you're saying to me, don't expect no hope. Just go ahead and do what has to be done.
We got to fight for hope. That's all I'm saying to you. We have to fight for hope. We have to live in a real world and recognize that nobody else out there owes us a living. So, and that if we are to get to the point where we can say we are a developed country, then there are changes that will have to be made. And there are going to be sacrifices that we just can't escape. That's our reality.
So what you're saying then, just expect the rug to be pulled out on you at any time. This is what you're saying to me.
I'm saying the focus has got to be, first of all, on the kind of dialogue that we seem to have now. There are differences that will arise.
Correct.
Between parties, but
correct.
At least you are sitting around the table and you're trying to find solutions.
Yes.
And the government cannot come to the table and say it alone has the solutions. It presents ideas and then it must get the input of private sector and labor to try to find a common ground. That's the first thing. And then on top of that, within our communities, we need more people to understand that a lot of the negatives and the shirking and the bad aspect of business and the bad aspect of life in communities, the extent to which perhaps we depend so heavily upon government to do everything for us, rather than trying to empower people within communities. You know, this thing, that's why I come back to the idea of giving, politicians being perceived to be the ones who give. Because at the end of the day, there's a dependency that is perpetuated rather than empowering people.
But how could you say that when everybody is giving, Mr. Ellis, but politicians, everybody is giving? Hey, you know what? Something that I want you to take a very careful note of. I remember years ago, Mr. Adam, Tom Adam had linked salary increase of civil servants to parliamentarians. You remember
yeah.
that thing?
Yeah.
Huh? Good.
That took the controversy out of pay increases
no,
in the public.
Right.
But,
No. Here's the significant point that I want to make to you. What is being asked of the civil servants now? Who had an increase in their salary? Is the Prime Minister, I'm calling her name because she's in the negotiation, so don't think that I'm just targeting her. Is this same thought process as far as the, what's it called, demand, the whatever fancy name they call it for salary cut? Are their salaries going to be attached to this? Because, mark you, they receive an increase when to a certain get a increase. And Tom aligned it to that. Therefore, it is tantamount to expect that when this is being done with the civil servant, that it will be done with them. Because in there also...
Okay.
You follow them. You see where I'm going with this?
I've heard you, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution.
I'm calling on the union to ask these questions because these are significant.
All right. Thank you very much. Welcome to the program. Going up until 2 o'clock, and it's now 1:24 in Barbados. Hello.
Good morning. Well, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir. David, I've been listening to you and some of your callers, and I'm getting from you that there's some pushback and resistance to the government's programs and the negativity towards its programs. Now, this is principally because between the period 2008 and 2018, it was difficult for the last administration. Don't forget, when the last administration came into office, it was on the cusp of the worldwide recession. And there was no respite coming from the opposition at that time. All during that period, in resistance to what the last administration was doing, there was this rubbing shoulders and the marches and the protestations, motions of no confidence. Don't forget, David Thompson was Prime Minister of this country from 2008 to 2010, October. And before he went to meet his maker, the Barbados Labour Party bolted a motion of no confidence on his chest. 2 years, you know. And in those 2 years, he was ill for about a year. But that did not matter to them. They protested and, of course, find all kinds of ways to resist the last administration. Now, this government came to office in 2018. And since then, yes, I will submit the one positive you can point to would be the increase in the foreign reserves. But all of us know that the increase in the foreign reserves is based on tremendous borrowing from the three major financial institutions. But the conditions of Barbadians and Barbados on the whole, there are no major changes to the people's welfare, their well-being, or their standard of living. As a matter of fact, homelessness has been exacerbated.
This sounds like a former minister of government. Is this Steve Blackett?
It is, yes.
Okay.
Once
you establish that, then put in context. Once you do that, we can put in context your assessment of the government's performance.
Uh-huh.
But you know, in all of this, there's something that prior to COVID, and I think COVID has made a difference, a significant difference right now. But prior to COVID, there are those who will tell you that they sensed an improvement in confidence. They started to feel as though we could get back to business. The ability to borrow money under the last administration, it was difficult for us to get money from IMF or the CDB because we were supposed to meet certain criteria, certain conditions, and we apparently were not prepared to do that. So not even our capacity to borrow was not where it should have been as a consequence of the position that was taken by the former administration. So, I mean, when you look at, in looking at this, I don't know that anybody in the country would say that prior to the end of March or thereabouts, that there was not some sense of change in how people felt about the direction of Barbados. And it would take time, I think you would agree. And I'll say one more thing about this thing about the relentless pressure on the Democratic Labour Party administration. I have been around this country for many years. I watched various opposition parties work against the administration in office. We have had BLP in opposition pass. They were relentless in going after the government, and Democratic Labour Party as well in opposition. But you know, the real test is when, as a government or a ruling party, you are able to get your job done, notwithstanding the criticisms that come at you. Agree?
The question of confidence and the feel-good atmosphere in the country, that is subjective.
Precisely.
It is subjective.
Let me agree on that. We agree on that.
It came all at a tremendous cost to certain segments and constituencies. No, I'm not talking about political constituencies within the country. Don't forget.
But wasn't that based, Mr. Blackett, to a large extent on the difficulties that were inherited by the administration when year after year we got tax increases and yet at the end of the day we got downgrades? We couldn't see any light at the end of the tunnel and therefore that made it more difficult. That's their response.
What is their response? But listen to me. When you stop that environment to the current environment, we are no better off. This is what they say. I'm telling you that the average Barbadian does not see any change.
But that's subjective.
In this country,
you just tell me it's a subjective assessment. That's your view.
But the whole thing is that
you. But that's your view.
But you're behaving as though there's no counter view.
But there's no counter view.
I'm putting on the table is the counter view. So you must not get down on people if they have some resistance to this government and giving them time and all of that.
I hope that when I point out alternative positions as it relates to the discussion in this program, that is not perceived as getting down on anybody. I mean, at the end of it, more than one side has to prevail. If you come and tell me X, I'm going to tell you Y. So that's what I do. And I am saying to you that in the same way that you have this negative view that nothing has improved, I can say to you that there are other people who looking at it would say that's not true. Look at this. Look at that. Subjective assessment, as you say.
But I would like them to itemize the positives. And for every item that they can bring as a positive, I am certain that myself and other people of my ilk could counter the things that happen with out of a positive nature during the Democratic Labour Party. Look, our housing program is.
But listen, the people of Barbados voted on that already, you know.
But listen to me, and so will they vote on this.
We'll vote again.
Performance.
We'll vote again. Right now, the Democratic Labour Party has to look towards the future. How it is going to rebuild? How it is going to reposition itself?
Right.
Because people already voted.
Absolutely. But listen, those things that affect people in a very personal way, I am sure that people look past those things, because certainly some of the social programs that the last administration was involving and impacted positively on the lives of the average Barbadian, when they went to the polls in 2018, they looked past that.
And why? Your question is why? I haven't heard any analysis of why the people would look past those things. that you saw as the good thing?
There were several reasons that were proffered at the time. I'm not going to get into the reasons, but past that, and, okay. and certainly they will look past what this current administration is doing, because when it gets down to the social things, the things that impact and impinge on a personal basis on the lives of the average Barbadian, nothing has changed, Mr. Ellis. That's what I'm saying. If you're talking about a few nylon roads, the Democratic Labour Party have roads too. Roads. But the
Nylon Road, you need a fuller program to discuss this. So next time the Democratic Labour Party sends somebody to represent it in a discussion, see if you can get a pick and come and have far more time than you'll be able to get talking to me now.
No, I
remember the times when we used to invite the Democratic Labour Party to come to discussions, and I could never see you in one of them discussions. All of a sudden, you're talking up a storm.
I am not so gifted. This would send people.
Hear you.
I quit.
I hear you. Thank you very much for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing, man?
I'm okay.
Okay. I have a little something here that has me a bit perplexed. I'd like to raise it with you, please.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to have some difficulty understanding your policy, your station's policy, that callers, as I understand it, are not allowed to critique or criticize the comments or remarks of a particular moderator unless they speak to that same moderator directly.
I hold to that. That's like hitting a man behind the back.
I tell you why I seem to have some difficulty with it.
Well, I want to hear it.
Well, thank you. I seem to think, right, that the policy is problematic and sort of restrictive and constipating, right? Because the moderator is an employee and agent of the station. And generally speaking, I don't think the station can divest itself of accountability for a particular moderator's statements or remarks on air, right? So I'm saying that it strikes me as being somewhat strange, right?
Oh, what's strange about that?
Well, I'm trying to explain it, sir. Thank you. It strikes me as being somewhat strange, right, that the station would appear to dictate that a caller must call when a specific moderator is on air in order to ventilate a matter relative to comments made by the station. Because when a moderator speaks, he's speaking as an agent of the station, right? My thinking is this. Now, who's to say that the caller's schedule will permit him to call at such
a time? Real concern, Bo. Tell me something more specific. You concerned about something in particular?
Well, I'm just you. I'm concerned about that policy. I remember.
Okay. Well, let me say to you, we can't always agree. And if you don't agree with the policy, well, that's unfortunate. But I'll tell you this: I really believe that it is better for you to speak with a particular moderator you have a difference of opinion with, rather than going on the air when that person is not there to try to rinse out that person's view, ably aided and abetted by a fellow moderator. I don't agree with it. If it happens to me, when people come to me talking about other moderators, I do not encourage it.
Right, I understand what you're saying, but what I'm trying to say to you is that the downside of it, in my opinion, let us say, for instance, a moderator makes a particular statement, okay? And let us say he leaves the station or he's fired.
He's a phone call away.
Right.
He's a phone call away. But the moderator is not to be treated any differently than anybody else in this country.
But, Mr. Ellis, what I'm trying to say, when the moderator makes a statement on air, and I'm repeating this, and it's for emphasis, he is speaking as an agent of the station. If that moderator should leave the station, he's not really a phone call away in his capacity as a moderator anymore.
So if you hold to your position, it would mean that somebody in station management will have to come and defend him then.
Well, I'm still thinking.
They can't leave the man out there or the woman out there by themselves like that. If you have an issue with something that I have said, come and deal with me. If it's one of the other people, go and deal with them. But this thing about trying to set up scenarios, because let me tell you something. I know very, very well how these things are manipulated, you know. I've been around long. I know. Sometimes I don't say things, but I know how things are manipulated. And you can find a person who will go following the particular approach that you are recommending. You will then create an environment where people would not want to come and sit down as the moderator.
But
because you can't, you know, it would be unfair. I don't agree with it.
I am not
going to bow to that. Personally, I'm not going to bow to it.
It's not a matter of bounding. You seem to sound quite defensive. All I'm saying is that it can... Okay, I called the station some time ago, and I wanted to make a point, but I just used as an intro, I attempt to use as an intro, a statement that had been made by another moderator. And the guys were like, no, you can't, you go there. And then it was just a simple, harmless little thing that I was referring to the fact...
But don't worry about it, man. That dead, I'm gone. Look, we got to play by rules. You may not like the rules, but we can play by these rules for now. All right?
So
the time will come when somebody else will call that shot and open up for everybody to attack everybody and that sort of thing. But I don't think that's the way we work as colleagues. That's not the way we're supposed to function. Okay?
So are you saying there's absolutely no scope to even rethink or relook the policy?
I am not inclined to go in that direction. I think there's a danger in it. Whatever you may see as a downside, from your perspective, I believe that to go in that direction create more harm than good. It's not useful.
Okay, well, thank you for being so defensive.
I don't know what issue you could have that is so big that you will have to attack a moderator behind the back.
You keep using that language. It's not a question of attacking, sir.
Don't worry. Let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to come in here because I know I'm going to die quickly. And unlike the caller that you just had, I ain't called to be the either attacking or defending no moderator, all right? Because I believe that everyone has a democratic right that has been given by our party to speak freely, and the media, including the press, have rights to say how they feel, and you charge the moderation how you want it to go. Good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm off of that. Good. All I have called to say, right, in relation to what my comrade, Steve Blockett, has just said, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are here to defend the stewardship of this great party that a lot of people that call on this program quite regularly, the Jamaican, et cetera, right? That has nothing else but ill things to say, to understand, right? We have done a lot for Barbados. A lot of people want to dispute that. I know that you are not one of them because I know you know better. But I know you personally, and I know you know better, David Ellis. Right? And despite what they are saying, we will come back stronger and more bigger and better than before. When the time for the election arrives, we will be there to meet the challenge. Because we are here for the people. Even though we are not in the House of Assembly, I want the Barbados to know that we are still a voice for the people out there in the wilderness that don't have a voice. We are the voice for them. And we will continue to hit hard at this current administration, where we see them fall, where we see them do something that is of some kind of merit, we will say bravo. If it isn't of merit, we will challenge them on every single thing. Who got a problem with that, whether in the media or not? Well, too bad. You understand? Because when we were in administration, we had marches of shame, walk of disgrace, the unions, everybody, they're talking. No, you don't hear nothing, so, and a lot of nonsense going on about here during COVID-19 and before COVID-19. So I want all of them to know that we run on each program, either up the Riverside or up CBC, and talk nonsense. Think first before you talk.
All I can tell you is that I'd like to think that we of various political persuasions, the opportunity to analyze what's happening in this country, to make comments, make suggestions. You know, there is the government of the day. They always have the opportunity to have their say, and so should you. I know that we get some criticism from time to time that we hear here on Brass Tacks. Some people think that we hear too much politics, that there is too much of the negative, that's what they say. But this is par for the course. This is how the project is, and it must facilitate diverging perspectives. If we all said the same thing and agreed with everything, Brass Tacks would die, and you would find no interest in it whatsoever. So let's work with it the best that we can. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I want to first commend you on your patience, Mr. Ellis, because some of the things I think you have to deal with, I don't know if I had the patience to deal with those things. I really, like you, have no problems with anybody criticizing any government, because no government is perfect. My problem sometimes is the lack of the critical analysis that people criticize governments, whether it's this one or the last one, with. And I want to commend the last caller to me. To be honest, I appreciate his view. He came and he said, listen, we did wonderful things. This government is not doing everything right. And when it's time for us to come back, we will come back. I appreciate that. And I do not know why people let party politics blind their ability to critically analyze a government. That's the truth. It really annoys me. Because, to be honest, I shudder when I think about what would have happened if we had kept the last policies of the last government and have to face a pandemic. I mean, I will be honest, when bus fares went up, I don't catch the bus, but I shuddered. Because I know people that were going through hardship. I know people who suffer from this water outages and all of that. And it really is frustrating to me. But that does not mean that I do not see that when taxes had to be raised and so on, that it really put us in a better position to deal with this pandemic. No, I don't know what is so hard about anybody for admitting that. Because I remember when Prime Minister Motley first took the government, I remember her saying clearly she hopes that no hurricane or any natural disaster hits the country based on the current position, based on the position that we were in. And I could understand that. No, you know. So I don't understand why people think, first of all, that a government cannot be criticized, or that because you are criticizing a particular government or something like that, that something is wrong with you. No government is perfect. And that's my first contribution. My second contribution is about the Waldron issue, the Dr. Waldron issue. Again,
yeah.
I don't see the panic, because every public servant knows that if you go and speak to the media, there are certain consequences that you will face. And you will get a letter saying, come before this meeting, and, you know, these are the consequences that could happen. I believe that Dr. Waldron knew exactly what he was getting into when he came and he said what he had to say, and I commend him highly for that. Martin Luther King knew what could happen to him, and he paid the ultimate sacrifice, and he still stood up and did what he had to do. So I don't know what the panic is about. This is the natural process of what will happen if you're a public servant and you speak out. And as I said, I commend him highly for speaking out. I want to just run to my next point quickly. Honestly, I just want everybody to know that the people who are quickly calling for churches to reopen do not speak for all churches, and they do not speak for all Christians. I know, for example, I read a few weeks ago that there were two pastors that were saying, we are not in a hurry for our churches to reopen because we do not want to put people in danger. And they also emphasize that because of the technology, it is like the churches had never closed, and they actually get more people taking part because you are in the comfort of your home and you can still take part in some services. So they don't speak for all of us. They don't speak for all Christians at all. And I find that there's this thing going on where people believe that everybody that has a church wants the church open back for money. That annoys me a little bit, because I know, for example, my church has made it very clear that the only concern that they had was the well-being of the community and the members. And their concern was, how are we going to reach people who are in desperate need if the churches aren't open? And as you said earlier...
But let me ask you this question.
Yes.
Given all that is available to us via technology today, yes, are you really, do you really believe that the only way to reach those people is by having them walk into the church?
Exactly. So quickly, you realize that, you know, you could reach people, and people, because honestly, people would automatically just pick up a phone and call a number that they see in the phone book to reach a church. And that was the only concern that we had. How else could we reach these people? And you know what? The God that we serve opened up a way. The same WhatsApp that we use every day, people will call and say, you know, I heard this church is distributing this. You have to just practice the social distancing, wearing the mask. And people went and got help. Understand? So, again, they don't speak on behalf of everybody. And like you, I picked up, because when the argument was made that the rum shops are open, I thought, wait, but the rum shops aren't open for people to come and socialize and lime. So I don't understand it. And then rum shops don't only sell rum. So I didn't understand the argument that the pastors were making. And as I, again, want to emphasize, they do not speak on behalf of all the churches. Yes, as you said, you miss the fellowship. But when you think about, look, I saw one of my fellow church members in a supermarket 2 days ago, and without thinking, she started to run to me to give me a hug, and I ran, and then she said, wait, I almost hugged you. And I could imagine that that would be the scene in many other places.
It's instinctive.
Yes. So why are you going to open a church and risk people being infected? To me, it is not worth it. And for those who might say, but everybody doesn't have technology, yeah, people have books and they can still read. And there are still people who would drive by these vulnerable members' houses and, you know, knock on the door and shout from outside and say, I just come to pray with you. I just want to make sure everything is okay. We are limiting the power of the gospel and power of God when we make statements like these. And to me, it is an unfair representative of those people who are conscious and who, you know, just basically use common sense. I just want to end my contribution on a personal note, because I don't know if you saw the story that came in Barbados today about the young man who went to the QEH more than 4 hours after he had the COVID-19 test. And
I saw it.
Yes, and I really want to thank the media house that printed it, because, you know, I have personal interest in it. He is my nephew, and we are, as a family, still reeling from the incident. It was really an awful experience.
But what do you think caused that?
Now, let me be fair, because as the article would have alluded, he did write to several agencies to let them know about the situation. And he was very fair in saying that first of all, he commended the frontline workers and everything. And of course, he acknowledged that everybody is fearful. But to be honest, Mr. Ellis, I personally feel that if he was a prominent member of society, it would not have happened. People would, because he went to a private doctor, as you would have seen in the story. He called ahead and whatever, and the doctor had concerns about it being diagnosed as possibly COVID. So she said, no, you come to me. And when he went there, the staff came out in their protective gear. And there was no cry of a shortage of protective equipment at the QEH. And I'm saying, why couldn't that be the policy? Why couldn't? Because, I mean, COVID is not the only disease out there. The other diseases have not stopped happening because of COVID. So are you just going to put a person in a room, in a very, very cold room, may I add, and just leave them there until you hear a result? I mean, he went for his test 2 o'clock one day, and it was after 9 o'clock when he got his result. In that space of time, he could have died. And I mean, from something that was preventable. So to me, I was very glad, because he felt it was his social responsibility to let people know that this thing happened to him and to be very careful. And to be honest, it took a while for a response, but this week, you know, just frustrated by the response, I went on the QEH's website and I filled out a survey. And the next morning, the risk manager, God bless her, she responded immediately. And to be honest, it was really downheartening. And I will say this, I don't know if I would get in trouble for saying this. You know, you contacted persons to find out, you know, do you think this is a newsworthy item? And he contacted the media host, and one of the journalists said, but I don't know if I want to publish anything that would cause any embarrassment to the prime minister or the government.
Straight All right, then.
The person told him.
That is something that you have to grapple with when you are dealing with serious issues. Okay. This one, as long as you're dealing with the health of people.
Right.
There's a line of argument that goes this way. It says, don't publish it because it may make people scared. Don't publish it because it may make people panic. This is not the time to publish it, and I don't, sometimes you don't know when will be the time to publish it. The issue fundamentally is always this. Is this matter important to people in this country?
Right.
Is this something that people ought to know and ought to, more than anything else? Is this something that ought to be corrected?
Correct,
this
correct.
This is about trying to shield the administration and the prime ministers. Sometimes the very people who are making those decisions, they need to be better informed about what is happening, you know.
That's
so sometimes they go and sit down and listen to one group of people and forget the rest. And, you know, it's subjective. So I think this is a dilemma that you can understand that a person who is in the media will face.
Right. But I'll say this, though, lastly, because I know there are other callers. When I went on the Facebook page of the stories, if you see the horror stories that are reported there, and my question is, when are we going to do something?
We coming out of the report which was carried in the press.
Oh, coming out of his story, there was a
whole set of comments coming. Well, you understand? Right. You understand where we are.
Right.
You understand where we are in this country, and it is
right.
Very disconcerting to think that people go through all of those experiences and say nothing.
Correct. But they say nothing, and then, of course, when somebody comes out and says something, what is the response? Because for a long time, I've been thinking of the fact that when you are in some countries, you are evaluated. And this evaluation and your performance is tied to your tenure. I know that that could be victimized. I am not foolish. I know that could, you know, go very, very south. But for a long time, people have thought that because I have a job or because I'm appointed, I can do what I like in Barbados. And that is a serious problem for me. I mean, when an orderly can look at you and you tell him, look, the room you put me in is very cold. Nobody has been able to adjust the air conditioning unit. I'm sitting outside of the room because my heart feels like it's slowing down. And the orderly looks at him and says, well, if it slows down, a doctor will just stick something in you and start it back, go back in the room. I mean, that is ridiculous.
So you've got to, ultimately, this story revolves around the policy that says this place will be COVID-free. If you stick to that and you don't do certain things, people will feel disadvantaged because people who are working in the system are also going to operate from the premise that to keep it COVID-free, we don't know whether you got it or not. So we operate the premise that you got it, and therefore we are not going to deal with you.
But look at the opposite, though, Mr. Ellis. Suppose he had, like so many people have, gotten frustrated and said, you know what, I'm not staying here, I'm going. And he can't turn out to be COVID-19 positive. There goes that infection out through the door to infect other people. And that's
the those are the intricacies. Many people in the country love the idea of hearing this will be COVID-free.
Yes.
And they say, well, I am safe.
Mm-hmm.
How safe you are is heavily dependent upon how that policy is implemented.
Correct.
Because remember, something happens to you when you're real sick. Who's the first place you can go?
Exactly. And the thing is, he didn't just pick up and go there. After a doctor felt doubt about this thing, she did test and she called ahead. She gave him a letter and she said, I'm sending this guy here. And, you know, she was very, very clear. You know, and I'm saying, when he got there, why should he have met with that sort of behavior and that sort of hostility?
Because chances are that's driven by the fear.
Right.
That fear of COVID
mm-hmm.
is also going to play out sometimes like that.
But there are also other diseases around that we need to be fearful of. I mean, you know, does anybody that goes to the hospital with HIV, are they treated like that? So I'm saying, if you have a fear, yes, but you have a policy, or there should be a policy on how to treat people that present themselves at the hospital. If you had come in there with a gunshot wound, you think anybody would have been checking to see if he's COVID-19 positive or not? They would have still taken the precautions as if he was. And that is my other concern, you know. Nobody stopped to take the precautions that they should have. They just took him in a room, and the child could have died.
Well, I think it is important for us to get behind this kind of development. Because, you know, sometimes we wait until something big happens, and then you say, but we should have done this and we should have done that. This is an opportunity to just point out to those who are in the positions of responsibility what you see as the strengths and what you see as the weaknesses, and try to you know, to assist them in trying to get the thing, get it right. And, you know, that's the best that we can do. I thank you very much for your contribution to the program today. I want to thank all the other persons who contributed as well, both as callers and as listeners. And my producer today and technical operator has been Dennis Johnson. I'm David Ellis. I want you to have a great afternoon. That's it for today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks.